Blog Talk Radio. into the darkness. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Tonight is our Dark Poetry Night. It is also an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content and language. If you find that this is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. And for tonight's show, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry with 4 pieces of artwork by Alexander Compan. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that name right. I should have probably looked it up. I highly recommend checking out his artwork. It's very intriguing. And we got a nice full contest, lots of responses, and of course I'm looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. Also, make sure if you get a chance to go to Amazon and check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. Going?
All right. What's going on?
Well, all kinds of stuff. I've just been, you know, it's cold and rainy here. So I spent the first half of the day sleeping and the second half cleaning and cooking, and made a nice roast chicken dinner, you know, all Martha Stewart-like, except for, you know, not you know, committing tax fraud or any of white-collar crimes, because, you know, my collar's not white enough to commit those kind of crimes. Let's see. Oh, it was my nephew's 10th birthday. He was actually born 11-11-11. And I'm trying to think, anything else interesting? Not really. I'm a fairly boring person. And how about you? What's going on with you?
Just raining.
Yeah, I understand that. Good day to be inside and write some poetry, do some reading, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. Well, I have to say, what I found really interesting about this artist, Alexander Compan, that I accidentally stumbled upon, is the fact that his artwork is borderline not dark. Like, some of it you would actually kind of call cute in its own unique, terrifying way. So it was just very interesting. A lot of it involved, like, mythological-looking creatures from the sea. It's really difficult to describe it. But it was kind of one of those artworks where that you could see people going dark with it, but you could also see them going in other directions. So I just wanted to see what people, you know, got from it and see what kind of darkness they could pull out of it. And that's always fun to do. So, you know, like I said, I'm looking forward to this show, hanging out with you and, of course, other cool poets. And speaking of other cool poets, go ahead and bring a couple of guests on. So first of all, we have Jeremy. Welcome, Jeremy. Glad you could join us.
Oh, I'm still nursing this Halloween candy corn hangover, but that roast chicken dinner tonight has put me straight. I'm ready to talk poetry, peeps.
Well, there you go. Plus, we're all in the hot tub together. So how much better can it get? All
it's
right.
Great to be with you guys again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to hear you, for sure. And then we also have Kel. Welcome, Kel. Glad you could join us. And Kel is a birthday girl, so happy birthday, Kel.
Thank you.
Well, happy birthday.
It was also triple digits. 11-11, born at 11:15 in the afternoon, in the morning, or something like that, as far
cool.
as I can remember. Yeah.
Yeah. The 11 in the morning was the 11 o'clock time was the only thing my nephew didn't get. You know, so, but he did get 11, 11, 11, so really,
that's,
you know.
Cool.
That is. That actually happens, I think, only, I don't know how often it happens, but I think once every century or something like that, that a birthday lines up. It must be once, or what would be, I guess so. Huh, I don't know. I'm asking myself to think too much. That's probably not a good thing.
Another interesting fact is my grandmother's birthday was November 22nd, so I was born 11 days before her birthday.
Oh,
and
cool.
11 days before cool. 11 days before JFK was shot.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, if you want anybody to sing happy birthday to you, Jeremy and Rex will sing. I can't sing because then Jeremy and
I have
to sing,
Madeline.
So.
And
happy birthday, Kel. Happy birthday. We'll get a duet going here. Don't you worry.
Thank you, Jeremy.
There you go.
I heard you sing, Pam, and you're not that bad.
Well, obviously, your ears were clogged up on that day, so.
Must have been. I could be a little tone deaf. Who knows?
There you go. All right. Well, who is ready to march into the darkness?
I know I am.
All right. All right, Rex, what do you got up for us first?
The Evil Inside Me by Vicky Moore.
And who's reading it?
Oh, let's see. Ooh. All right, Jeremy. You're up. This one's all on you. The evil's inside you.
No worries. Do we have a post up on the board yet?
Yes.
I'm not seeing it, guys.
You should refresh.
I just refreshed. All right. Forgive me, I'm a little rusty. The Evil Inside Me by Vicky Moore. Here we go. Let's do it, guys. The evil inside me. The evil was born inside my ear. Sometimes it's a voice is all I can hear. It tells me I'm bad. It tells me to die. I know it's not true. I know it's a lie. The evil keeps yelling louder and louder. It's trying to take away all my power. I fought so hard against what's inside me. It feels like I'm fighting against a banshee. Screaming and yelling at me so fiercely, biting and gnawing like a grizzly. The pain in my head hurts, a red hot fire. It's taken away all my hopes and desires. I've tried so hard not to let it win, but every day it screams, die, again. Tonight I'm afraid of the evil has won, for here I am sitting with Daddy's gun. One pull of the trigger is all it will take to silence the hiss of this poisonous snake. I can take no more, it must be done. Now the evil will hear the blast of a gun. End poem.
Great read there, Jeremy, and that was definitely an exception, a dark, very dark write from Vicky Moore on the idea of the evil within, and I think it also touched very well on the idea of struggling with mental illness. And I like how she wrote this in one block. I think, for me personally, I don't think writing in one block always works. But you want to create, I think it works well for poems where you don't want that break, you don't want that pause, you just really want to create that sense of anxiety. I really like where she puts screaming and yelling at me so fiercely, biting and gnawing me like a grizzly. I think grizzly, besides rhyming, you know, with banshee and fiercely was a good choice, because oftentimes other bears are known to back down or completely ignore humans. Grizzlies and polar bears are both known to be a little more aggressive. And so by that was a great choice for the idea of how aggressive the evil inside has gotten. You know, I think this is definitely a powerful dark write with a horrific ending that kind of hit, even though you know this isn't reality, it's made up, it still hits hard because, you know, somewhere out there, it's somebody's reality. So it definitely hits hard, and it's very well done. And Kel, your thoughts.
Oh, golly, I can't help thinking it sounds almost like a schizophrenic. And, yeah, I've got a nephew that's schizophrenic. So it's kind of, oh, golly, the evil and silent ear. I mean, he hears voices and, you know, sees things that aren't there, and it's just all really creepy. So that's kind of what this makes me think of, but that's right along what you were saying about mental illness. I thought this was a very dark piece and very well done.
Absolutely, and I'm glad I said mental illness, not thinking specifically, but I'm glad that you specifically brought up schizophrenia. And so that was just a really great observation there. And Rex, your thoughts?
There's a lot of cognizance in this, the understanding of good and evil and what lies within, and having the wherewithal to think outside that singular box and decide that something must be done. And the only way to actually excise the evil is to actually excise yourself as well, because you can't have one without the other.
I like that thought, the whole idea of you can't have one without the other. Really interesting observation there. Thank you. And Jeremy, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I love, Pam, when you bring up the fact of, or you bring up any kind of conversation involving format, because, yeah, that's a big deal for me. I think this is really cool, too, and I want to expand on what you said on the fact that there's no stanza breaks, because there is a story to this poem. There is a natural progression, and I think the fact that Vicky decided not to break it up made this more of a prosy feel to the story of everything that goes on. So I liked your comment, and I applaud the fact that she made that move. Also, with something that's so dark, I mean, this is like Kel said, it's schizophrenic. Like Rex said, I mean, there's a yin and yang of the inner struggle of all of this, and it's a really dark themed poem. And the fact that there's suicide at the very end of it is a very serious topic. But using the poetic device of rhyme with something so serious softens it for me. And it's not softens it in the fact that it brings a smile to my face, but it makes it more comfortable, if that makes sense. I mean, the fact that there's the predictability in rhyme inherently, and the fact that she used the line-ending rhyme scheme throughout with couplets makes this more palatable, if that makes sense, guys. I mean, it's a dark thing, but it's something that almost has – it's because of the rhyme, for me personally, it's reminiscent of something that's more nursery rhymey, or something that's more sing-songy, or something that's more – I don't know how to say it – besides comfortable. So you're taking something really dark and something that for a lot of people could be a very serious topic – and you're relating to a larger audience because of that poetic device. And so I think the fact that Vicky made that specific move, I don't know. I think it reaches a larger audience, and I applaud her for it. Very cool idea.
Absolutely. I agree. I think the same thing about rhyme. And if somebody can pull off a dark right in rhyme, I always say kudos to them. I think one more thing I'd like to mention, because it really hasn't been mentioned yet, is the fact that this seems to be because of the, you know, thing using daddy's gun about a child, you know, at oldest a teenager having these thoughts. And I think that also adds to the darkness of the right. But, all right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Starless Bars by Ron Chamber, and this one's yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Starless Bars by Ron Chambers, and it goes like this. Green a finger upon a plow, dig out briars and rusted roll under the pillow bed, rain down, or yet mementos like metal-covered snow inside the heart of man. Grow the greenwood tree that my horizon rise infinity beyond the moon and stars. But sail no more, tide has washed those moth-ridden dreams squashed, a boyish umber eye in the summer wave. Old men grow impatient in rusted graves, prison of self-choosing starless bars, a life dimmed, blown out to marred. Hope fell like a silver moon of crescent down the rabbit hole to infinite descent, wormholes to a waiting obsidian destiny for him, for her, for you, for me, and poem. And let's go ahead, Jeremy, and start with your thoughts.
Sorry, guys. You can't start with me on this one. I need to digest it for a minute. Can we? I'll come back. Come back to me.
Oh, comment sure. Absolutely.
I need to digest
okay.
for a second. Sorry.
No problem. Well, you know what that means, Rex? It means it's yours.
All right. That first one kind of hits on that note of, the first stanza, the thought of hope and growth, the finger upon a cloud, dig out briars and rusted row, the pillar cloud, mementos, what one remembers in youth. And then you hit the singular but, and then it's where those dreams are forever dashed, so to speak. Moth-eaten dreams squashed, the boyish umber eye in the summer wave, old men grow impatient in russet grave. There's a notation, a turn there to the thought of age creeping in and that which one has done, because he hits on the next line of prison of self-choosing, starless bars, and then descent down the rabbit hole. And the waiting worms, that obsidian destiny, the darkness of the grave, the tomb, that which one will never arise from, and the ease and thought of the last line is something that everyone must accede to, yet we still linger on, especially when we're not ready to go. But apparently this one is kind of halfway there now.
I like what I heard. Unfortunately, I heard the first 3 seconds of your comment, lost, got dropped, and then heard the last couple lines of your comment. But I have no doubt, besides what I heard and from the fact that I know you, that it was probably a brilliant comment. So
it might have been the best comment he ever made, Pam, and you missed the whole thing.
Oh, I have no doubt about it.
You missed the whole thing.
And I missed all but 10 seconds of it. Oh, my gosh. Oh, and guess what? Now we're going to drop. Okay. Jeremy, you comment. And then Cal, when he's done, you comment. And I'm going to go get Rex.
Yes. No, I really liked Rex's interpretation of this. It clears up a lot of the ethereal feel for me because, I feel like this is it's a growing poem in terms of a timeline of life. And what I like the most is how the employment of colors is used throughout the poem. You start with green, and green is mentioned a number of times in that first stanza, which can be interpreted as youth being green or being new to something. But I like how there's the double entendre here of also the green thumb, the nature aspect of it. But I like the progression. I liked Rex's analysis. I like the fact that I gained clarity and it gave me a different side of meaning to this whole thing, and the fact that it is kind of the progression of life in the whole poem, and it's all used through beautiful metaphor.
Great comment, I think, I hope. I'm sure it was. Sorry. And Kel, your thoughts?
Well, I'm glad Rex explained it too, because after he mentioned it, the progression of life, I got it. It just took a minute. But I like his imagery Under the Pillow Cloud, Rain Down, Ariat, Mementos. And just all through it, he's got really amazing color and images. Just really fantastic. Those Moth-Eaten Dreams, Squash, The Voyage, Umber Eye, and The Summer Wave. That's really, yeah, it's fantastic imagery and very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Huh. There is actually a song called the Greenwood Tree song. Under the Greenwood Tree by William Shakespeare. Oh, okay. So it was a Shakespeare thing. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, Rex is always really good about seeing, you know, what's in a write. I really like how he starts out green, a finger upon a plow, with the idea, you know, that, I don't know, besides, you know, the message of life in general, I also see a message of having to work for what we get. And I like Rain Down Oriental Mementos, like a metal-covered snow inside the heart of man. Metal-covered snow inside the heart of man, I find to be a very intriguing write, and the whole idea that, you know, cold-hearted, the idea of being cold-hearted and having the potential to melt that cold heart, to become a new person. And I like how those two stanzas are separated by the but. The word but, yeah, let's not think there's a but there, sorry. And I really like prison of self, starless bars, life dim, blown out to Mars, hope fell like a silver moon of crescent down the rabbit hole to infinite descent. I like the prison of self choosing, like the idea that oftentimes when we become imprisoned within ourselves, it's because, you know, we refuse to move on. Those are just, you know, some of the thoughts that I get from it. I think it's, like Kel says, it's got the beautiful imagery, and it's very well done. And like I said, I have no doubt Rex and Jeremy gave wonderful comments. I just wasn't able to completely hear them. And Rex, what do we got going on now?
Enter My Inner Conk by Kel R.
Arr. Enter My Inner Conk.
Wow, hanging from the highest yard arms.
Okay. You'll never know what you find inside this conch that resides right outside of my inner mind. Tied up knots of my design, jellied, hardened, waxed with times of unheard voices unkindly. Speaking memories unlost I can find. If only I listen, not be so ear blind. I need to find a way to come untied, break the ropes that bind. Then I could clear away the slimed faces hidden deep behind. Their whisper lyrics fade rhymes in my cochlea conch lines. Linear ear canal blocked from grime. Candle wax drips, I'll rewind. If given a chance to, I'll come untied, although I ask for a reminder of talks we've had until into all combined. I really hope you won't mind. Didn't realize that I would be so mired in this soundless voice I cry. And poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Kel. I'm so glad you were inspired. And Jeremy, do you feel ready to share your thoughts on this poem?
Yes, yes, yes. I won't hide behind Rex on this one. Kel, I really, really love this. I like the inspiration, the piece that you chose to inspire this piece is what I'm trying to say. And the fact that you thought of a conch shell and the sacred geometry of what that looks like, because I see the form and how it's tucked in on itself and how that could be an inspiration for what you used as the theme or the title of this poem. And the image of that and that as a symbol of what you put is kind of a very tucked in, personal, self preservation kind of feel, right? It's like someone that's tucked their head in. It's the conch shell. It's tucked in on itself, and it's very introspective. And what you took then was all of the outside influences that are picking away at that. And that's a really cool story, right? Because it's how we all have to have that hardened shell, and you have to be able to fight off everything that's going to be breaking you down as whoever you are, whatever that could be. So I like that struggle, and I felt that angst that would exist in that kind of struggle that we all experience to some level. But inspired by that photo, or that painting rather, and how you took that and made it into a poem was very beautifully done. Bravo, Kel. I dug it.
Thank you, Jeremy. Absolutely. I have to agree. I like how you mentioned the shape of the conch and how you saw that like within the poem with the idea of, you know, that harmony, that balance. I know you didn't say harmony or balance, but that's when you were talking, that's the thought that came to my mind. And you're right there, Jeremy, it does have that real a feel of that inner struggle of trying to protect ourselves at everything that just bombards us. And Rex, your thoughts.
Oh, sure. Let me follow after Jeremy now.
you two can fight it out.
I did have the same thought about getting the conch out of that picture. I thought that was a clever idea. And when I saw the title, Enter My Inner Conch, I said, oh, okay, this is going to be different. And it was. The only thing I had outside of what Jeremy had to say there, because he did a great job with it, that's the start to the second stanza, tied up knots of my design. Then you hit on the thought, jellied, hardened wax, and candles. You keep offer patience to that, which actually clogs out the ear canal so that everything else can be in the moment. And that's done by design. So either it's from the need to, as Jeremy put it, to crawl into that realm, or it's purposeful in that way. Because you offer up the thought, if only I listen not to be so ear blind. So there is a touch of wanting not to, but still adhering to the fact that you've done this to yourself for some reason. And it's probably because of those, let's see where you got it, slime faces hidden deep behind. So there's either a kind of controlling factor that comes with those slime faces. They're slime for a reason. You don't want to see the faces. And the fact that you've dropped up your ears with everything you can imagine to close off the sound of those voices, there's something deep, deep and dark behind those faces to begin with.
I like Thank that, Rex. I like. I think you actually added quite a bit on to be like. You definitely had some great thoughts of your own, like the whole idea of the purposefully, you know, slimed, you know, trying to hide from something. And I like that you brought up where it says candle wax drips, I'll rewind, like that idea of trying to clear out the ears, you know, and trying to just, you know, it's just a, it's just wonderfully and intriguing writing. And Rex and Jeremy, you both had great comments. What I liked about this is the form that you chose to write it in, and just really strong use of imagery. Tied up knots of my design, jellied, hardened wax with time, of unheard voices kindly. I like that idea that tied up knots of my design, is that whole idea of putting yourself into self-preservation mode. Now, the candle wax drips, I'll rewind. You know, I thought there was kind of a duality to that, the idea of using the earwax candles to remove the earwax and be able to better hear and better understand. But there's kind of the whole idea that the passing of time used to be measured by the candle wax dripping down and how far down the candle had burned. So to me, there's this kind of idea of the passing of time. I like how you say in the end, I really hope you won't mind and realize that I would be mired in this soundless voice I cry. I think this is a strong write all the way through, but that really adds to it when you end with in this soundless voice I cry. It's almost like that whole idea of either an individual person or perhaps the earth itself or the ocean itself calling out, you know, in that soundless voice that people just refuse to hear. And I also thought using the phrase ear blind instead of deaf was just a really clever touch on that. And I was glad when Rex brought that phrase up, because that was definitely a really interesting and intriguing one. So very well done there, Cal.
Thank you very much, everyone.
All right, Rexaroni, what do we got next?
The San Francisco treat.
Cold Breath by Casey Day.
All right. And I figured I have to start switching Rex's name up. So, and we do have a SoundCloud for that one. So I'll go ahead and push play.
Cold Breath. I catch myself dreaming in forbidden hues and sinister shades, twisting and turning around memories, ink bleeding out of ash on a bed of gray. We're on the run, dashing across pavement promises, scraping our knees on things we'll never see. Folding, unfolding, and burning the laundry. Choking down the bitter taste of normality. On scarred knees, we beg for our day in the sun. Sleepwalking, we raise our wrists to the sky, waiting for our moment to breathe life. Only to find we were left to die.
Casey, thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you cannot call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Kel, your thoughts on Casey's poem.
Oh, I am impressed. I really am. This is fantastic. We're on the run, dashing across pavement promises, scraping our knees on things we'll never see. Wow. That's just fantastic writing. And to come up with that from that image is just, damn. Where did she get that? It's gorgeous. I love the imagery. I love the wording. The metaphors are just, you know, it's just really well done.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. And great comment, Kel. And Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. Because of the bleak turn, forbidden hues, sinister shades, twisting and turning memories, ink out of ash and bed of gray, and scraping knees on things we'll never see, folding, unfolding, and burning the laundry, bitter taste of the malady, scarred knees. And then the sleepwalking, this kind of hits me with the thought of the stages of abuse and the back end, waiting for our moment to breathe life, only to find we were left to die at extreme abuse.
You know, I think you're right. You got a really good point there. It does really feel like somebody, you know, look either like living through it in the moment or maybe like looking back on the abuse and trying to heal from it. And you're right. When it ends with only to find we were left to die, there is that idea, as you said, that it's not abuse, but the abuse and neglect, which is a form of abuse. Really great observation there, Rex. And, you know, I think this really makes that a very emotive right. And to the idea of, as you said, and it's not, whether it's, you know, and as you mentioned, there's kind of layers to processing abuse, layers through, unfortunately, going through abuse, layers to healing from it. So, excellent comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Yeah, Casey Day, I got to say that line, folding, unfolding, and burning up the laundry was the one that took it over the top for me. I love that. I'm going to put that in my wallet to steal and author myself someday. That's a great line. Love the previous comments. What it meant for me was one of those moments, especially when set in the parameters of those first three lines, when you're looking in the sinister stage and twisting and turning about memories. It was one of those cringe-worthy moments in life that we've all had, right? Those when you're looking back and you're thinking about your memories and something that you're not particularly proud of or happy of or it still kind of haunts you. And you want that comfort to get out of that memory. And I look at the image that is attached to it and that nestling, that spooning, that vulnerable cuddling with which almost looks like something that's emaciated, cuddling a rat. I mean, it's that vulnerable feeling when you're thinking about something that you're not proud of, that's in your memory, that is yourself, that is you, and it haunts you. And so I like the fact that it was gray, it was dark, and it was something that hurts, but it's something that hopefully you can take your wrists, put them up to the sky and say, look, that's a mistake I made. That's something I'm not proud of. Take everything from me because I'm ready to move on. So it's a tough thing that we all deal with in terms of swallowing that bitter pill of what we did that we might be ashamed of, but you got to move on. So that's what I took from it, Casey, and I really enjoyed the poem.
I like that. I like that. And it's always interesting how the mind works that way. Like there's those daydreams. Like it's not even like a nighttime dream where you have no control over it. It's a daydream where it just slips into your mind and you're like, why am I thinking about this? Why am I dreaming about this? But the mind is an interesting thing and sometimes it self-sabotages. You know, I found folding and unfolding and burning the laundry really interesting. If it hadn't been for burning the laundry, folding and unfolding would have made me think about folding and unfolding a map. Which is just a big struggle for me. Burning the laundry, there are some lines here that make me actually think of self-sabotage, choking down the bitter taste of normality, burning the laundry. And I also really liked ink bleeding out of ash on a bed of gray. That really makes me think about how whether it's darkness that other people have brought upon us, as Rex mentioned, or the darkness brought upon by our own choices, as Jeremy mentioned, we can have that ink that bleeds forth, that poetry, that prose, you know, that bleeds forth from those darker elements of our life. And sleepwalking, we raise our wrists to the sky, waiting for a moment to breathe life. There's really such an idea of struggling to want to wake up in a metaphorical type way. I think this was just a beautiful and powerful rite and very well done. And you all had wonderful comments. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Killer Queen by Emma J. Cool. And I guess it's my turn. Disguised as twilight, she glissades through new moon Venetian blinds, crawls inside with twelve-paired, wire-haired, insectoid apparatus, stiletto spindle ballet clicks and predatory timber winds, tales of past seductions, fine laced within wings of brocade lattice, needle-tipped proboscis glint, telescopes, aortic isthmus, 1,000 hematic eyes reflect sedate infrared pulse, ruby drips suction fed to greedy viscera dwelling villas, bloodlust majesty, swollen life, leaves shriveled, flesh husks to convulse, and pulse.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And I don't know about any of the other LNT shows, but I know for my contests and my shows, Emma J. Cool is it's fairly new. I think this might actually be one of the first contests of mine she's entered and one of the first shows of mine she's been read on. So, of course, I'd like to say thank you, and I really appreciate her, and it's always great to see new names and new poetry. And Jeremy, your thoughts on Emma's poem?
I'm going to say thank goodness that someone else read this, and Rex, you did a wonderful job, because the vocabulary in this is just, it's a cornucopia. It's I don't know that I could have made it through in the first pass, because it's beautifully written, and the vocabulary is just, I'm going down the vegetable aisle, picking out the biggest cucumbers, because this thing is just, I don't know how else to write it. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
I like that, the vegetable aisle.
I was practicing, hoping I wasn't going to be picked, because what she did here with her vocabulary in this beautifully, beautifully composed poem, just it really was a wordies feast, is the best way for me to put it. There's a lot of assonance, there's a lot of consonants, there's a lot of internal rhyme that I really, really fell in love with. And it wasn't forced, Emma. I mean, what Emma did here, she's the killer queen, and I didn't feel like it was something that was over, that she was just trying to be trite with any of it. It was very apropos language, and it was very predatory, I guess is the best way to put it. It was the killer queen, and I felt, even if I wasn't paying attention to the context of everything, because I was falling in love with the sound of all of it, the tone was very, very succinct, and it was succinct in very short measure. I mean, we only have 8 lines of poetry here, guys, and what she was able to do with that, I felt like the victim. I felt like I was the willing victim, because it was a beautiful attack in how it was composed. So, yeah, I'm a new fan of Emma Cool. I enjoyed this one.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm also thankful that Rex assigned this one to himself, because of the depth of the language. I thought he did a wonderful job. And I liked, Jeremy, that you did bring up, because this was something I was going to say myself, if you didn't say it, and when you did say it, I cheered inside. And that was that the language is not forced. You know, there are times like that you read a poem, and that you feel like the person just went over to the thesaurus and threw some big words in between everything else. But everything, there's a consistency with this, and it lines up really well. And as I like that you described it as a word feast. So excellent comment. And Kel, your thoughts?
Well, the whole time Rex was reading it, I could see this big old fly, you know, and this is amazing. It is truly a word feast. It's fantastic. I really, really like stilettos, spindle, ballet clicks, and predatory timbal winds, the tales of past seductions, fine lace within wings of brocade lattice. I mean, wow. Her wording is just amazing. It's just very well done. fantastic.
Absolutely.
They go fly. Wow.
Yeah, it does. You know, I'm glad you brought that up because it almost does have that feeling of a female version of, you remember the sci-fi movie, The Fly, the sci-fi horror movie? It first, had a black and white version. Yeah, that's what it kind of makes, I'm glad you brought that up. And I have to agree that one line with the tales of past seduction, fine lace within wings of brocade lattice was a really great line. So excellent comment there. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, this is easy to see as the bride to Vincent Price in The Fly, but I'd take it another way. This is the ultimate predator when it comes to that gold digger. Opening lines, disguises twilight, she goes stage through new moon, Venetian blind. There is a thought to, especially with that last line, past seduction, fine lace with wings of brocade lattice. There's a note to the sensuality wrought there. The stiletto, spindles, ballet clicks, not also a nice touch, but that says female. The thought, the needle tip proboscis, she sniffed out those that are rich enough to give her what she needs. And that is the ruby drip suction fed the greedy viscera dwelling villas. She sucks the life out of everybody, finishes out, leaving them a flesh husk to convulse. So she's marrying for the money, sucking life out of them, and waiting for them to die.
Ooh, I like that. You know, there are times, Rex, when you go in a different direction, and just I feel like, you know, my eyes are open to the possibilities and potential that are of something different in the poem. And you're right, but that stiletto, spindle, ballet, clicks, and predatory cymbals, winds, there is that kind of idea of a sensual, predatory-type nature. And I can definitely see this, that the whole idea of, as you mentioned, somebody who's a gold digger, somebody who's only, out for what they can get out of people, and as far as, there is no love. There is no, dedication. There is just simply, what can you give me? And if it's nothing that I want, then move on. So really cool observation there. And just a wonderful, strong, dark right by Emma. A beautiful use of language. I really liked bloodlust, majesty, swollen rites, leaves, shriveled flesh, husks to convulse, and crawls inside with 12-paired, wire-haired, insecticide apparatus. Apparatus. Now, that is just one of those words that is just really nice to just roll off the tongue. So, excellent rite and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
The Place of Her Sounds, Reminiscence by Alene Gamo. And since it's the last male voice for the show, Jeremy, you get it. After this, we're all female.
I'm glad I can represent male pride. Right on. The Place of Her Sounds, Reminiscence by Alene Gamo. The rhythm of her heart seems similar. The wave of her voice seems as semicircular, calling my name adorably in my inner ear, my dear. She holds me just as she would a silent via the air. The triumph of my victory for her love as a water drop on a flume, like the chirp and peep of flying birds in my eardrum, passing through my inner hearing canal nuclei, perceived while she sings a song in my brain cells, to the minuscule. Emanated from her feelings, transported on her love spirit, my darling's laughter and hilarity are still now resonant. My cochlea is the place of her sounds, reminiscent. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jeremy. And I have to say, personally, I just don't find this right really a dark right. I find it beautifully written and thoughtful, but, you know, perhaps it is that I'm just missing the darkness in it, in which case, of course, I'm going to turn to the man who shows me things that I don't always see. And with that being said, of course, Rex, your thoughts.
He's used cochlea, just as Kel did, but this one runs on a different role. The thought is the darkness in here is something felt to the heart because she is no longer around, and the cochlea is that that vessel which holds the voice. The way her voice seems to study circular, calls his name, the victory for her love, water drop on a flume, like a chirping people flying birds. Everything resonates through that that shell to his ear of that which is no longer.
Oh, okay. So it is a love story, but it's a love story like the movie Ghost, other love stories where the person is no longer around. Ah, that makes sense. Okay. Well, excellent comment there, Rex. And Kel, your thoughts?
Well, I wasn't real sure at first either. But I do like this. It's got more of a sensual, melancholy feel to it, though, than it does dark. But it's very well done, and it's emotive, very emotive. Beautiful writing.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Emotive is a perfect word to describe it, and I'm certainly glad, Kel, that I was not the only one who wasn't 100% sure. So, wonderful comment. And Jeremy, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't see it dark, guys. I don't know which painting was the prompt for this one. But I understand the fact that it's reminiscent, and I like the fact that you guys touched on it. It's reminiscent meaning that there's loss, or being that there's something that's moved on and it's no longer existent because of the fact that you're thinking back on what was there, on this intense love. And I love how personal it was, and I like the fact that Aleme chose to choose the inner ear, the hearing of all of it, because that's something very personal. It's right by your being. It's right by your brain of what's going on. It's very in your head kind of reference that he kept true as theme. So I like the fact that it was sound and that one sense that he kept to him as being the reminiscent common flow throughout this. And I thought it was the cool way that he kept poking at it with the different parts of the ear as the point that was something that was the most personal to him. So the fact that you lose something that's personal, I disagree that it has to be dark, though, guys. I mean, just because it's past doesn't mean it's not something that's precious and it's something you can still hold and it can be something that's still very real. I mean, our memories are something that really are what make us who we are, as you grow as a person. So the fact that this part of love was so intense that he still is carrying it around and he's carrying it in his ear is a cool place to keep the thought of this love that was so strong for him. So very cool thoughts and a lot of different directions on this one. So I enjoyed it.
Yes, absolutely. And I like how you've mentioned that it does have a personal feel to it. And he actually wrote to the same painting that Kel wrote to. I thought this had wonderful use of imagery. I did like how he kept mentioning the idea of hearing, you know, and I especially liked the triumph of my victory for love as a water drop on a flume, like the chirp and peep of flying birds in my eardrum. I thought that was really some just beautiful lines and very well done.
Before you move on, Pam, I like that you cleared that up because I like that Kel took this. I like that Kel took it and put it as a conch shell because it is that wrapped, the image is that wrapped figure that's kind of bent over itself. And I understood Raquel, we talked about that. But looking as visually as like the inner ear and the shape of what this is, that's a very cool different take than we talked about before. So thanks for clearing that up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, it is cool to see how people see the same artwork differently. All right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Pedophile by Pink Fairy 5. And I guess I'll take this one.
Okay, wait. Obviously from the title, just giving a trigger warning. And with that being said, go for it, Rex.
The ocean was as ebony as it ever been. The moon was ashamed of the situation, so she turned her back. He dragged the 78-pound bundle to the edge. A child's hand flopped out. This intensified his rage. He quickly looked around to see if there were watchers. Putting the heavy bundle into the stolen boat was a chore. He cursed himself for choosing such an old victim. 4 was usually his limit. This child had been 7. He rowed halfway to the cove and tossed the remains overboard. She went down, 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 down. An empathetic cyber squid followed the progress, gladly retrieving a glowing sucker, the one he had used to lure the child. And boom.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really like how with the multiple down, 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 you really slowed down your voice to fit with how the idea of like the body was floating slowly down. At least to me, I thought you pulled that off really well. Now, what's intriguing to me about this is that it's one of those that combines a cruel reality, a little bit of fantasy, because as it says, an empathetic cyber squid followed the progress. So there we have that kind of sci-fi fantasy within that one line. But the rest of it, and even the line, the moon was ashamed of the situation, so she turned her back, gives a personification and a fantasy feel to the idea of the moon reacting to what they see, but the rest of it very much is that cruel and harsh reality of a psychopath, a murderer, trying to dispose of the body of a child. And I like how this is told in that, you know, observational tone, you know, not by the psychopath themselves, not by the murderer themselves, but by somebody almost as if they are observing it. But what's interesting to me, you know, is the fact that it just really focuses on what the killer thinks, like the idea that he cursed himself for choosing such an old victim, or was usually his limit. This child had been 7. And I think those are the kind of lines that really hit hard. So I found this an intriguing write. And I have to say that I did actually really like how she did the down, down, down multiple times, because it really gave you the feeling of how deep this child was sinking and how far out into a large body of water, such as one of the Great Lakes or probably an ocean, probably an ocean, that they would have to be. So just really great attention to details in such a short piece, and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
It's hard. First of all, yeah, Pam, your comments about the perspective of it put me in a weird spot because, yeah, it's an awful subject matter. It's an awful story. And it's one of the biggest taboos, but you're drawn in by it, you know? I mean, because of the perspective that you mentioned, Pam. I mean, you kind of, I personally, I had a weird affinity to want to know what the struggle was for this aggressor. I wanted to kind of feel sympathy for him, and I had a weird emotion towards the subject of this poem because of the perspective that you mentioned, Pam. And then while you guys were reading it, while you were commenting, I was really kind of intrigued by the choices of Pink Fairy in the numbers of all of this. It's kind of minutia, right? But it's something that was really intriguing. The 78 usually goes four. This is a 7-year-old victim. And then the fact that down is just, I mean, you guys both, or Rex communicated it, read it, and then Pam focused on it. The fact that down is mentioned 9 times, I mean, there's something about the math of all of this and the numbers and the fact that it's, I don't know, it was something that was just kind of alluring to me, and I was transfixed on those parts of the poem. I mean, it kind of emphasized the youthfulness, and it emphasized the victim in very subtle ways. I don't know how else to put it, but if you're talking about single digits and you're talking about the title of the poem and what we're even looking at here, it's kind of emphasized and set back in that subtle way. So I thought Pink Fairy handled this really, really tough subject matter in a way that had me intrigued as opposed to repulsed. And when you're talking about poetry and evoking something out of your audience, I don't know that I could handle this topic and do it the way that Pink did it. So, yeah, I'm intrigued by it, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. I'm glad you brought up that numbers being used so much. And even mentions the weight. He dragged the 78-pound bundle. So there was another example of using numbers. And this is, I admit, it's a difficult subject. There's a part of me that even though I host a dark show and I write dark poetry, and that cringes at topics like this, but I don't turn them away, but I always have to take that deep breath inside myself. And then kind of steady myself, because I just know it's going to hit hard. But I always appreciate people who tackle difficult subjects. So I thought this was very cool.
Because there's a way to do it, Pam. I mean, I agree with you, because there's a way to do it and include your audience. And I mean, there's obviously
absolutely
a way to shock your audience and repulse your audience and push them away. But she, the way that she did this includes you. You know, she's bringing you in, and you want more in a way. I don't know.
Yeah,
I agree
you want to know more.
Great comment.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah, it is one of those where you just want to know more. And Kel, your thoughts.
Ollie, I don't really know what I can add that you guys haven't already mentioned. It is a very, very hard-hitting subject, and this is an emotive poem in that sense. But she does it with such finesse that you kind of overlook the subject matter and just want to read it. You want to know what's going on, what's going to happen. And I really like the end with the empathetic cyber squid. You know, that's really pretty clever writing, and she did it very well, very well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, and I have to agree, Cal, the empathetic cyber squid was a really cool part. So excellent comment. And Rex, you did an amazing read of that. Your thoughts?
It's those last three lines that matter most, because they bring the picture to full bloom. You've got the girl as a squid, so to speak. You've got the glowing sucker, and that's what he lured this 7-year-old with. And she makes an emphasis of him cursing himself because of the heavy bundle, and the arm falls out. And it's not his usual taking. 4-year-olds are usually. That means this one is slight of build. So 4-year-olds are more of a weight barrier as opposed to someone who's 7. and at 7 to 8 pounds is a little heavy, but it also points to the child from that picture to the child in this one, the 7-year-old, that he was able to lure this one with that glowing sucker. That means that 7-year-old was actually underdeveloped mentally, took advantage of the situation. And now he's cursing himself for being intoxicated to that point to take a 7-year-old rather than a 4-year-old. And you're right. This was writ in such a manner that gives light to the victim itself without offering up too much to him of him, except for the fact that he is an opportunity predator.
Wow. You make me think of the show Criminal Minds. You could be one of those people who, psychologically analyzes criminals and their behavior patterns. I like that you mentioned that he was an opportunistic. And when you said that, that possibly, I know you didn't say possibly, but, obviously this is not said straightforward, you had to say possibly, but you brought the fact that there's a good chance that the child was underdeveloped mentally. That just, that hit really hard for me. And the whole idea of, somebody that is evil enough. I mean, anybody who takes advantage of a child is evil. But somehow it just hits twice as hard when you think of somebody. I don't know. I'm saying this wrong. But it's just...
Well, if 4 is their limit, the only reason he's taking a 7-year-old is because they are mentally challenged. And they are still very much childlike, like a 4-year-old. And therefore, they're easy to handle, which hits on that question that Jeremy hit on about the motivating force.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that is a really good point there, Rex, because, you do have to ask that question of, what is the motivation that somebody who would usually not take a 7-year-old would? And as you mentioned, because 4-year-olds are so much more trusting than 7-year-olds. And so that really... I mean, what you said makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that added a new dynamic to the right. So kudos to you. And all right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Indifference Kills by Julie Buck. And Cal, why don't you read this for us, please?
Okie dokie. Indifference Kills by Julie Buck. I am hearing your quiet. It's loud. It's loud. Causing to gather in me angry confusion. Because you shut down. You goddamn quitter. I thought I'd left that way behind. Your treatment of silence. Always a classic. My intelligence and indifference kills. Get dirty for me. Track me in sarcasm solid trenches. Muddy up, baby. Pollute me. Meanwhile, I'll cringe and cry. Insecure blue tears. Charge that sordidness is traveling and due to arrive at sundown. How I loathe being purposely ignored. Not letting me in. It hurts. It hurts. When exactly did your atrocities come to life? I choose to not hear you anymore. Be it your words or lack thereof, what only matters is I'm easily expendable. And along with your cruelty, you're just fucking stupid. End poem.
That was absolutely a wonderful read there, Cal. And Julie wrote to the painting Glamorous Poseidon, which was one of those that was kind of borderline. Like, it wasn't overtly dark. It was like this little, almost looks like a little chicken floating in water, holding a paintbrush with blue on it, with He's got big eyes and blue lips and blue running down his shirt. It's just really intriguing because it's almost more sad than dark, but then like also kind of adorable. Real quick story here because I feel like sharing. My 13-year-old daughter was showing me a drawing she did of a girl, and because she was very proud of it. And I was commenting on it. I was saying, well, the face looks like she's kind of, like it has a haunting look, very forlorn, very sad, and yet her hand is raised up as if she's waving. And I said, I really see within this drawing the idea of a call for help, at which point my daughter turns to me and she goes, Mom, you need to shut off your poet mind because it is working overtime. And so that's my poet mind, and that's my story about how my daughter thinks it just works way too much and overanalyzes everything. But with that being said, let's go ahead and get your thoughts, Rex.
Well, the ease of thought for me in this one is the talk of going down that road with someone who treats you like shit all the time. But I'd go another way. This is the access, the left side of the brain talking to the right side of the brain, because they never communicate together. They're always off on one loop or another, as one offers one world while the other offers another. It's that thought, I'm hearing you're quiet. It's loud. I know you're in there. The confusion because you shut down. You shut down because you don't want to hear what I have to say. There's that back and forth angle of how one calls the other stupid for not obviously complying in the moment to that which the other side is offering up as a thought. And what else? I did like charged. That sordidness is traveling and do arrive at sundown. There's that notion of when the darkness comes, so will that other voice to actually not placate, but harass. And or the other angle hits on this, not letting me in. It hurts. The angle of being shut out from that existence because I want to know everything rather than just my half of things.
I like that. I like the whole idea, the observation of being like two sides of the same self, and the idea of that self-criticism that comes alive, that comes forth. And I, too, really like charge that sordidness and is traveling due to arrive at sundown. It does give kind of that idea. This is what I thought when you were talking about it, Rex, is that idea that it's at nighttime that those most difficult thoughts and inner voices really hit us. So great observation there. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, great comment, Rex. I like how, I don't know, looking at the prompt and hearing how it is, there's a growth to this poem. And the prompt looks very naive and vulnerable, and there's a growth to this. And I like how it starts with paradoxes right out of the gate. I'm hearing you quiet, then it gets loud. Then she talks about the intelligence and indifference, and then it gets more mature. It goes to talk dirty to me, and it gets sexual and very mature. But there's that struggle that I like that Rex went inner struggle, but I, for me it was more – it was personal struggle with someone else. I mean, I guess because that was the easier interpretation of this. And I feel like there was a growth to it, and I like the fact that you start with something as a prompt that's very naive and malleable. And the fact that there is a growth bounced off of someone else that is the yin and the yang. There's the struggle throughout that, and we all have those kind of struggles in relationships. And then at the very end, the strength doesn't, the strength of all of this, because it's victimized. The subject is victimized throughout the entire poem until the very end, in which there seems to be a stepping back, and the final line of saying, ah, you're just fucking stupid. It's not me. It's not me that's the one that's struggling with all of this. It's the fact that I was a victim, and I was able to grow throughout this entire process, and now stepping back, I realize that you were the instigator, and now I'm someone stronger and better because of it. So that's what I got out of it. Great poem, Julie.
Absolutely, and great observation there, Jeremy. I like how you mentioned there's a sense of growth within the poem, and you know how she really did a great job of going dark with a prompt that wasn't particularly very dark in itself. So excellent comment. And Kel, you read that wonderfully. Just great pause, pitch, and punch. And your thoughts?
I got more of a sense of basically somebody shutting down. Not the writer, but whoever is her protagonist. It's almost like someone's given her the silent treatment. Or they were in an argument or something, and they just took off and left. You know, they're not listening to her. They're just treating her with oh my God, I can't think.
No, I like what you've said so far. I know how it is to just kind of have derailed thoughts, because that happens to me all the time. But the fact that you brought up the silent treatment, I think was a really important part. And the idea, you know, that, you know, how much it really emotionally and mentally affects a person when somebody gives them the silent treatment. Great observation and comment there, Kel. And since I blabbered a little bit, did you have anything that you wanted to add on?
I guess this part, your treatment of silence always a classic. Maligns my intelligence and indifference, kills. Get dirty for me, track me in sarcasm, sullied trenches. It's like she, you know, she's daring this person to fight back. You know, don't ignore her. Just fight back and, you know, instead of running away or ignoring whatever is going on, is that what only matters is I'm easily expendable. Along with your cruelty, you're fucking stupid. You know, is this, she's basically, you know, telling them, hey, wake up and listen, because, you know, I have things to say too, and it's not all about you. I thought it was really well done.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's just a sign of a really good poem, when you can ask three different people their thoughts and get three different trains of thought. So, but yeah, I thought this was a wonderful, strong write. I thought it had a great emotional response. I really like maligns my intelligence and indifference, kills, get dirty for me, track me in sarcasm, folly trenches, muddy up baby, pollute me. Meanwhile, cringe and cry, insecure blue tears. There's just a real, it evokes a real emotional response with its imagery. Mm-hmm. And so, excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The next one.
Before we go into
Katie
the next
Hartland.
One.
Oh, yes, Kel?
If I may, I'm going to go ahead and go.
All right.
I'm getting really drowsy. I think my meds are kicking in.
I understand that.
Happy
well,
birthday,
have
Kel.
Night.
Have a great night. Happy birthday. Happy
Thank
birthday.
You guys. It was a wonderful show. I'll talk to you later.
Good night.
All right.
Night
sorry,
Rex. And this
okay.
one's yours.
Who's reading it? Oh, mine.
You.
All right. Cool. All right. The Night Fly by Kay Heartless. And it goes like this. The Night Fly's veins are dry. She watches withering skin crack through compound bloodshot eyes. Steady sips with softest lips, the lightest touch for exposed skin. Her liquid diet keeps her thin, plus bulimia beats heading to the gym. The Night Fly feasts through petite feet. If not their fetish, then she'll gag them. Memories like scars that scratch them. Her lap dance licks all sort of pricks. Lustful skin, her favorite bed, the burning loins that keep her fed. The Night Fly spreads all must be bled with excellent grip and hinging jaw. Infects the exposed with leprosy and yaw. At peak, she jerks her knee berserk, fast the smacks, sees men in her back. The Night Fly loots the putrid fruit, leaves her babies in a dumpster every time her boyfriend pumps her. If Night Fly rests, it's upside down, 30 days to party and piss before the endless abyss. End poem. Wow. I have to, this one actually really impressed me. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Damn it. I'm sitting here trying to compose my thoughts, and I don't get to go out to Rex on this one. Damn it.
Well,
no,
I'll
this
go.
Is, this
no problem.
No, I'll do it. I can do it. I'll be a big boy. This is a great poem. What caught me is there's an intelligence to the right? The dark theme, the mature subject matter and all of it, and the rhyme is very well composed. And what I appreciated most is the fact there were breaks of it. And it's something that I can't do because I get caught up in my own freaking hubris and when I'm writing poetry, and I forget how powerful it is when you take a break from the dogma that you create yourself. In whether it's rhyme or theme or metaphor, whatever poetic device you're using, if you take a break from it, it lets the reader take a breath, and it's delightful. And the specific example that I give you is in the second, the last line in the second where it says, bulimia beats heading to the gym, because it started off so thick. And I was caught up in how thick it was in the metaphor and what she was doing with the poem. That one line gave me that breath. You can think of the line, and then they did it again. She did it again at the very end, the second line to the very end, 30 days to party and piss. The fact that the word that was piss, party and piss, it was like it was a comfort. It was a comfort. You have to breathe in the poem, and it makes it more, for lack of a better word, it makes it more common. So, and the best way I can describe it is, you know the movie Black Hawk Down and how incredibly intense that whole movie was, and the fact that they took that little second to make the funny joke about the guy when they shot the gun and the goofy guy couldn't hear anymore, it's like you could finally just breathe for a second. And I think that's a powerful way to subtly remind the reader in a poem that's as packed and as tense as this one is, that it's human too. And I really appreciate that device. So not to take away what Kay did in this whole entire poem, it's that little nuance that really what struck a chord for me. So that's my comment.
Well, I like that. And that is a really good point, how she does allow you to take that breath with those lines. And so very cool observation. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, you've got to go with the inside rhyme she uses for each and every first line for the stanzas all the way down. Fly dry, lips, feet, licks, pricks, spreads blood all the way through, jerks berserk. So she sets a nice tone with that. And also the offset rhyme. You get the no real rhyme out of the first one, except an offset with the eyes and dry. From then on down, she hits on skin and thin from second to third, plus, like Jeremy said, offering up that gym as a break, but still working within that near-rhyme scale. Everything else hits on rhyme for the second and third lines from then on down, except for that last, well, then again, she produced that same effect for the last two lines in the finishing, but she also does not use inside rhyme on that finishing line either. Now, as for the feast itself, I'm getting, because she hits on, what's it called, the night fly, kind of hits on that tone of a bar fly. But this one, because of what she offers up, leprosy and yaw, that kind of hits on the notion, this is one who is quite fetid, and she's deliberate in her actions because she's spreading her disease deliberately without letting anybody know beforehand. Leaves her babies in a dumpster every time my boyfriend pumps her, but she's going out every night anyway for somebody else. And the thought with 30 days to party and piss before the endless abyss hits on that notion. She knows when she's going to die, or near enough, that it's 30 days to party and piss and infect as many people as she can on her way out the door.
I like that. I like that you brought up the idea that this is somebody who's going around infecting people and knows how much time she has left to die. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that she has inner rhyme, but that the idea that the rhyme itself kind of changes throughout stanzas, which is, I think, is another way to grab the reader's attention. I thought, I really thought this was a strong ride with her lap dance, licks also her pricks, lustful skin, her favorite bed, the burning loins that keep her fed. I like how this is someone who it's almost like the comment Rex had made about the other poem. It has that same feel, only this is almost more darker because, you know, this is, as Rex had mentioned, somebody who just, it's almost like they want people to be as sick and depraved and unhappy as they are. So they're spreading their illness. There's also with the line, leaves her babies in a dumpster, there's a real sense of someone who just doesn't care about anything or anyone else. Just a really intelligent, dark right, and very well done. All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Blue-Lit Darkness by Poetess Queen. And Jeremy, you're up.
Blue-Lit Darkness by Poetess Queen. Those silent whispers bubble forth as mind spins in black holes, discombobulating thoughts, pulling strands of ideations whence forth, keeps mind perched upon waves flowing like a tsunami as I ponder its conception, incepting burbling calliums as they swarm about like winged nymphs inhabiting a river's flow as if a castaway, stranded on a deserted isle. Weeping in its blue lagoon as darkness creeps, leading mind to delve deeper into those black holes of space and time. And blue tears dribble spills forth, wings flutter while suspended within my mind as time stands still. I blue-lipped in a dark terror of bubbling thoughts, gripping my mind. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jeremy, and a great write by Poetess Queen. I have to say, discombobulating. I'm like aphasiana that way. Is sometimes there's just some words that are just fun to say, like discombobulating. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, that opening stanza kind of hits on it. O silent whispers bubble forth as mind spins in black holes, discombobulating thoughts. Already it's hitting on the notion that going deep within the mind and that which comes out of it, hits on ideations, perched on waves. There's that note with the waves that flow like a tsunami. So the thought of what comes out is kind of like a nuanced role of I don't know, and I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what I'm going to be doing in the moment. It's like you get on that thought of stranded on a desert isle and weeping in the blue lagoon as darkness creeps. Again, it's an overwhelming thought, and that end sits on the note, I, blue lips in darkest terror, a bubbling thought gripping my mind. There's that notion right at the end, the fear of walking that realm, knowing there's going to be all these mask of overwhelming dark thoughts flowing freely across the mind, that it keeps one in a state of fear and shock, and they don't know. This is kind of like the the twisted sort of the mind. When it goes dark, it goes over the edge and you go into another realm. I can't think of it. It's not what we've talked about earlier, the duality. You can be high and mighty 1 minute, and the next you're bubbling over the edge into the darkness, fear.
That is a really good point. I mean, anytime somebody has a breakdown, becomes a serial killer or whatever that they've gone into, there is always that moment where things just turn, like there's that, you know, and I like how you mentioned there's that kind of just over, like I like that you use the word overwhelming, the overwhelming thoughts that just the idea of the darkness that has all of a sudden enveloped you. So really cool observation there, Rex. Excellent comment. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
So believe it or not, I do have a couple followers on All Poetry, and I have a group of friends that I'm trying to bring into our group here of late night poets. I'm trying to get them out of their shell. So Emma, if you're listening, this comment is for you. Hopefully we'll get her to dial in. I'm trying to get more on our team, guys. But what Emma does and what reminds me of this poem, and I always comment on her poetry and what happens here, and I can never do it, is the dance from one stanza to the next, and it's almost continuous, but there's a break. The obvious example between the second and third is a tie between conception and incepting, cast away and stranded. There's no pause. If you don't read it without the visual pause, there's the lyrical pause of how the idea continues down the page. It's an awesome device. And I love the fact that Poetess used it in this one, because it got me in the spirit of this little tucked up nymph that is the inspiration for the poem. And I love when poets do that. I have yet to be able to use that device and get it perfected. But I like the fact that poems can trickle down the page and be broken into stanzas. Stanza break is a visual pause that doesn't necessarily pause in. I don't know what the name of that device is. Do you guys know? Am I missing something here?
I'm not really sure. Do you know, Rex? Like when all the stanzas are basically just telling one flow, but they break. Is there a name for that?
Is there a name device for that?
Not that I know of.
I don't know. The fact that a poem is able to flow that way, and I like the fact that it gives the reader the chance to pause. It's a cool device that I've seen used a couple other times before by other friends, and I like that it's used here. So I don't know. That's my takeaway.
Absolutely. And, yeah, that is – I do like being able to have that chance to pause when I'm reading something. And wonderful comment there. Of course, you know, we greatly appreciate – you trying to get other people to call in, and we always enjoy having new callers. So, of course, you know, anybody, you know, would be welcome. And we don't bite unless you enjoy that kind of thing.
A little bit of singing might bring some people in, Pam. I mean, just saying. I'm no judge.
Well, maybe they
saying.
Already heard me sing, and that's why they're staying away.
No way.
And bipolar was the thought I was trying to get at.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that, Rex?
Bipolar was the thought I was trying to get out.
Oh, okay.
There it is. I thought it was schizophrenia. I'm with you, Rex. I knew what you were trying to say, buddy.
I like that. Very cool. Yeah, I have to say this was an excellent dark write with a great flow, and I really appreciate that POTUS Queen wrote for this. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Blue Plague by Diane D, and you've got an SC for that?
Yes, we do. And I'll go mosey over to the studio and find it. Play.
The Blue Plague by Diane D. Defenseless eyes, do not be fooled. Bubbles secreting from her temple. Viral and poisonous when bursting. Releasing a blue plague. It spreads like waste of dust from a vacuum. Alive and of sprightly contamination. Tentacle hands, an unsightly human feet. Copulation of mixed colony breeding. Gurgling teardrops expose blue bulges of infection that passes through a lunar leak. Boils of liquefied oil of rattlers appear fatal to the weary commoners. Its first victim of the feminine kind will be lionized as its mortal queen. Only a virus keeps her in existence until her highness is no more needed. Then her liquid blue lips and arrows are stripped of their lethal venom. She is as vulnerable to its side effects as her colonized robot-like disciples, who she trained to spread a vaccine through a disease-stricken land. A land whose queen has been ordered to deconstruct the weakened colony. Derelicts of the dregs of the trenches know not of the queen's intentions for dominion, who run like coyotes through drought-plagued slob plantations, where this queen plans mortal sacrifices to finally rid this land of that blue plague. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. I really liked how her background music that she chose had an intensity to it that seemed to build up. I also like that this one goes into the idea of death stalking humanity. Like a couple others we had that we talked about, you know, were the idea of a female, you know, hunting down. And this makes death and gives it a personification, but makes the idea to me that it's hunting down all of humanity. And I like that it touches on the idea of plans where this queen plans mortal sacrifices to finally rid this land of that blue plague. And the idea of, you know, when panic sets in, you know, what and who will people be willing to sacrifice? I also like how this has a very dark sci-fi vibe with tentacle hand and unsightly human feet, copulation, mixed colony breeding, gurgling teardrops, exposed blue bulges of infection that passed through a lunar leak. That is just, it's kind of horrifying in the idea of a world being destroyed and stripped. So just a powerful dark light and very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Diane. Diane, what are you doing to me here? We have a little cuddled up blue-lipped bird, and all of a sudden she's taking over the world.
I know, right?
I loved it. No, I mean it, that's what caught my attention. I mean, it's the prompt is such an introverted, little, innocent, crouched up, joint smoking bird, and immediately what Diane took, she spread it open. From the beginning, she spread it open. The eyes blew up. Everything became infectious, and she took that introverted, self-cuddling image, and she blew it up. It became something more infectious. And in a lot of ways, metaphorically, visually, physically, you can take that a lot of different ways about how that would infect you. But I like the fact that it blew up, and then once Diane let it go, then all of a sudden it was taking over the world, and I like that. I like that she got on that train, and it became this fantastical journey of domination. So it was something very personal and very id from the beginning, and it became something much bigger. So I love the imaginative quality of this piece.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, I have to agree. It's poets like Diane with poems like this that make me glad that I don't steer away from a picture or a painting just because it's not overly dark, because she really just ran with this. And I have to also say, I really actually want that image on a T-shirt. I think that would make just a really cool T-shirt image. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, there's a conspiracy theory thought in this that ranges on the surge and purge of reality. The thought of the colonized robot-like disciples. Boy, that sounds eerily familiar as the bots that run through the internet doing this, that, and everything else. And all of a sudden, it kind of walked in the thoughts of where we are now, derelicts of the dregs of the trenches. Mortal sacrifices kind of hints on the notation of what a lot of people think of us as humans. We're not worthy of anything beyond the notations to their glorified feet.
I like that. I like that. And I like how you mentioned that it touches on elements of reality and the idea of questioning, you know, what humanity is worth of and what they're not. So just a really great comment there, Rex. All right, and what do we got next?
I forgot. Let's see what we got next. River of Hands by Deb335, and that one's yours.
Okie dokie. River of Hands by Deb335, and it goes like this. Resignation, feet entombed, solitary island, incarceration, ultimate destruction, centered oasis shrinking, encroachment upon crumbling rock, rancid crawling flesh fills the river of hands. Hands reaching out, ragged nails carve away their welcome, covetous of life soon to be devoured. Fingers stretching from basin's bottom, enveloping the viable bone, beckoning bone. Death stench, a quiet thief. All fingertips mouthing hungry screams, an obscenity of rattling teeth, grandly spewing forth bilious toxic verbiage. Hands that have touched the doorway to hell bring forth very truth. Footholds fail in the river of hands. And poem. Wow, that had some really strong visceral imagery. And Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Hmm. Well, Sharp is up with starts with resignation, feed in tombs, solitary island, incarceration, ultimate destruction. That kind of paints an ugly picture of thought. Then everything, hands reaching out, ragged nails, there's the sort of crawling out from the stew, so to speak. Then again, things stretching from base to bottom, bone beckoning, bone death, stench of quiet thief. It hits on that thought of if you let things go the way they are, death will come easily, especially when it comes to that the bilious toxic verbiage. And then the bottom end, the doorway to hell, bring forth buried truths. That's kind of a different turn of phrase to use, but it kind of, it does work because the demons have to tell truths, even to their detriment. So it hits on that notion with the last two lines, the footholds fail in the river of hands. So the demons are not being let loose as they want because they offered up truths that those that are the river of hands understand. You deny them, they crawl into the light.
I like that. I like that, the idea of the offered up truth. A really great comment there. I have to say this makes me think of two things. First of all, the river Styx. But it actually makes me think, like, if it wasn't written for this contest, if I just read this poem on its own, I would honestly think that it was written to a William Blake painting. It has that feeling, that kind of dark spirituality of a William Blake painting. And I thought this was very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, great comment about spirituality. I like that word that you put to this. Because, yeah, I mean, it's the gates of hell bringing you down, like Rick said. I mean, this is bringing you down. And you know why? It's from the very first word, the resignation, the giving up, the surrender. And after that, after you give up, after you resign, the rest of it is just that pulling down weight. And it's ascribed to the nth degree. And I don't know. It's pulling you down to the gates of hell. And it was true the whole way through, on theme, on point, and on tone. So love it for that.
Absolutely. Great comments, both of you. All right. Let's go ahead and get one more poem done, and then the rest will be carryovers for the next Stark show. So what do we got up next, Rex?
Well, I did find one more male voice for Jeremy to read, Love and Freedom Abide by Thomas B.
I know you'd let me be a man, Rex. I know you wouldn't give up on me, buddy. Love and Freedom Abide by Thomas. Play me the sounds I might drown, my sorrows still fighting with my dreams. The music of souls resounds with possibility beyond a maybe, or the hope wrapped in wishes, a winking star still struggling with dawn. Lies try to steal the light as the sky crumbles against the starry star dark. Stripped, torn, tied in anguish to the resolute norm, I feel my form dissolving. Liars tear my flesh, spitting on truths formed deep in heart where love holds out. Beats like waves, waves like beats. A sea of confusion make me ache as the world echoes my crimes. I try to be free, express the art in me. Others did not agree. The righteous are sure. They act with no chance for wrong. My songs ache with light when they soar their darkness, carve the proper path as the drew a breath. I gasped and died. And last, end poem.
Wonderful read there, Jeremy. I have to say, I always appreciate Tom's writing. I do wish he could call in to read his own. I mean, he did obviously a great read, but, you know, Tom, his reading of his own poetry is always great to hear. But unfortunately, I understand, you know, after midnight shows just, you know, aren't for everyone as far as time goes. What I like is that this focuses on death, but like almost more of a metaphorical death of the destruction of self. I really like, I feel my norm, my form dissolving, liars tear my flesh, spitting on truth's form deep in the heart where love holds out. And that whole idea of a person, an innocent person who's ready and willing to love, being destroyed. There's a real sense of an abuse, of a destruction of something that was pure and beautiful. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, let's see. It opens up my sorrow still fighting with my dreams. The music of souls resounds with possibility beyond the maybe or the hope wrapped in wishes and waking stars still struggling with doing. The music of souls resounds with possibility. It's talking about people and still having their troubles, their pangs, their aches, their annoying possibilities. And he hits on that within himself in the second stanza. I thought with faith and reality, liars tear my flesh, spitting on truth's form deep in the heart where love holds out. So he's holding on to that notion of change. Where else we got? I see a confusion makes me ache as the world echoes my crimes. That kind of hits on that notion of being depressed, being outlawed, criminally motioned because of a word, a thought, an idea. I tried to be free, express the art in me. Others did not agree. The righteous are sure. They act with no chance for wrong. Again, a pointed note to the half-witted imbeciles that enjoy their twattering thought, which actually has no basis in reality. Not to mention some other idiots on YouBoob, and what else we got out there? The ogling of Google, and not to mention, face farts. There's a good one there too.
Sorry, that just made me laugh. But, absolutely great observations there, Rex. Excellent comment. And your thoughts, Jeremy?
Yeah, great comments, guys. I know we don't have much time left, and I love this poem, Thomas. I mean, you can't have something that's – you can't have that sense of loss unless you're breaking down something that you idolize as something beautiful. So I like the fact that there was something that was cherished. And there's that breakdown. So wonderful comments by both of you. Always a pleasure to hang with you guys on a poetry night. Whoop, whoop. We'll hit the hot tub next time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comments, both of you. And I'd like to say, of course, thank you to Rex, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to Jeremy and Cal for calling in. Thank you to those who vote for the show. Who are listening now or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background. Please make sure to check out the contest that the Late Night Poets hosts and hostesses are running for upcoming shows, including Rex's contest, where you get to pick your favorite Tina Turner song to write to. My
private dancer.
Mine is What's Love Got to Do with It. So now we know that Jeremy will be writing to Private Dancer. And so many cool contests.
Well,
mix
it with a little Elton John and go Private Tiny Dancer.
Oh my gosh, I like that. All right, well, great show, everyone. I had a fun time, and have a good night.
Good night, gang.